Hey, whether you enjoy listening to Breaking Down Collapse or Building Up Resilience, I think you'll also really enjoy our bonus content on Patreon.
Yeah, Kellen and I take 20 minutes each week to talk about the news that's happening all around us and Collapse as it plays out. We like to have a little fun with it, but also make sure that you're aware of what's going on in the world of Collapse.
We look forward to having you join us there. The link to join us on Patreon is in the episode description.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Corey, do you know what I think is one of the most underrated movies of all time?
Barney and the Magical Egg.
You know, I would have to watch it, but I imagine you're right. It's probably highly underrated.
It holds up after all these years.
Have you watched it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a favorite growing up.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that wasn't just a joke.
You think if it was a joke, I would remember the name of Barney and the Magical Egg? Which, it's actually funny that I say that, because that's actually one of those... I was talking to my brothers about this. What's it called when you... Everybody thinks it was called something, but it was actually called something different. Anyway, it's like a glitch in the Matrix. There's a term for it that I can't think of in the moment. It's called Barney's Great Adventure. But I always called it Barney the Magical Egg, and we all grew up thinking that's what it was called, but...
Okay, so Barney's Magical Adventure... No, what is it?
Barney's Great Adventure.
Barney's Great Adventure is one of the most underrated films of all time.
I just thought that's what you were going to say. I don't think that. I'm curious what you think the most underrated film of all time is.
Well, yeah, I was going a little bit of a different direction.
Oh.
But I respect what you thought I was going to say.
Were you going to say Tenet?
Yes.
Oh, I knew you loved that one.
Yeah, you've heard me talk about that movie a lot. It's a Christopher Nolan movie. I really like a lot of his movies. Tenet, I think, is absolutely brilliant. A lot of people didn't love it for different reasons. But
Tenet spelled backwards is Tenet.
Well done.
Thank you. Now you know the whole plot of the movie.
Yeah. In fact, if you haven't seen it and you want to be surprised by it, like, it's been out for a number of years, so I don't feel too bad. But I'm about to give some spoilers.
Oh.
And it relates to what we're going to be talking about today. So basically... you find out that people in the future have a technology. They're reversing the entropy of time, meaning like the linear direction that time travels.
As one does.
Yes. And that's happening in the future. But in the present, there is a man named Sator, who is kind of the villain in the film. He is doing some things that will help that happen. The main character doesn't have a name. They just call him the protagonist, or that's how he's referred to in the script and whatever. He is obviously trying to stop it, because if they can reverse enough items and enough things, then when the entropy of time goes the opposite direction, then what's happening in the present will all be obliterated.
Okay.
All right. So does that give... I don't want to dive into too much detail, because we could take a long time talking about Tenet.
Yeah, I watched the movie, and what you just explained to me, like, it still doesn't make sense. I got to the end of the movie and went, what just happened?
It is such a good movie.
I've got too much of a smooth brain for that type of movie.
Okay, well, anyways, what happens at one point, the protagonist is talking to the villain, Seder, and he says, how come they want to kill us? Right, referring to the people in the future.
Right.
And Seder says, because their oceans rose and their rivers ran dry, don't you see they had no choice but to turn back? We're responsible. Knowing this, do you still want me to stop? The protagonist says, yes. Each generation looks after its own survival. To which Seder says, that's exactly what they're doing. And to me, it's really interesting in light of all the collapse conversations that we've had, because there are so many things we've talked about where it's like, if we just made some changes now that made things a little bit more difficult for ourselves currently, it would help, you know, prevent collapse. It would help things at least mitigate it. It would help things go better in the future. Got to make changes now to improve the future. And as we've seen in past generations and even in our current generation, people typically don't care because each generation looks after its own, you know, benefit, its own well-being, and doesn't seem to care much about those in the future. Today we're going to be discussing long-termism, which is kind of the opposite of that. So, Corey, why don't you describe a little bit about what long-termism really is.
Well, how about instead of describing what long-termism really is, because we'll get to that, let's first talk about what they want you to think long-termism is.
What they want you to think.
That's right.
What a conspiracy.
Here it is, straight from Wikipedia. Ready? Long-termism is the ethical view that positively influencing the long-term future is a key moral priority of our time. It is an important concept in effective altruism and serves as a primary motivation for efforts that claim to reduce existential risks to humanity. What do you think?
Sounds great.
Sounds lovely.
So maybe reword that in like just normal common language.
Yeah, basically they're saying the idea is that we need to prioritize the future of humanity over the current humanity. And like you said, that's an sort of an opposite to what was described in Tenet. The idea is we don't care so much about ourselves. We care about making sure, or I should say we don't care about ourselves now. We care about making sure that humanity succeeds in the long run.
Yeah, that of all the places we could be putting our time, our efforts, our resources, it should be to ensure that humanity can persist in the long term.
And before we dive into this, because there's a lot to say about long-termism and effective altruism and effective accelerationism, which are all sort of linked, you may have heard a lot about these recently. The reason we're talking about this today is because I think very few people actually understand what this is all about, because it does sound good on the surface. It's hard to hear what I just read from that Wikipedia blip and say that there might be something dangerous, nefarious, inappropriate about what long-termism actually is. And I think we want to make sure that people are aware so that they don't get sucked into this type of thing. Now, I'm fairly certain that most of our listeners likely are not, though some may be. And there are extremes to everything. So this is not to say that a person who wants to make sure that the future of humanity is taken care of and is important, and it's a moral imperative that we look out for the future. Like, on the surface, that all sounds great, and I think one should strive for that. But the actual philosophy of long-termism is not the way to do that. So we'll get to that in a minute. Before that, I want to say, when you look at the world today, if you listen to the first 130, what is it, five now episodes of Breaking Down Collapse, and you internalize what we've talked about, if you simply watch the news, like, it is very easy to see that the world is a mess, right? And it's headed in a poor direction. It is a difficult thing to do what we've done and what a lot of collapseware people have also done, which is to accept the state of the world and to accept the future that we're headed into, to be able to go through the grieving process, everything that's involved there. So many people want to hope. They want to have faith in the future. They want to be optimistic about what's to come for the world. And I don't blame them for that, right? It is good to want good things to happen in the future and even to believe that they will. Kellen, you and I have done some recent episodes on AI, and I think you know that I've taken a special interest in it. I've done a lot of research lately in what is happening in the world of AI, what direction is it headed, like what are the things going on there. And in the world of AI, there are so many promises about what the future will hold and all of the greatness that's going to come from it. There seems to be two extreme sides to beliefs on AI. One is that it's going to save us. One is that it's going to lead to our demise, right? When I look at the world and its current state, and I say, there is nothing that can save us, right? Like, we are just headed in the totally wrong direction. This thing is too big. The one thing that theoretically maybe could is a super intelligent, benevolent AI that only has the purpose of fixing humanity, right? Like, nothing else could do it except for this sort of sci-fi fantasy belief in what will happen when we hit a singularity. So this is a long way of me sort of saying, in a world where humans have chosen not to take the route that would be required to lower carbon emissions, right? To let ecosystems heal, essentially for degrowth and any of the even possible solutions we've talked about, it is apparent that we will do nothing but continue to surge forward. And in the end, that is what long-termism and effective accelerationism are about. And there are some real dangers hidden in there that we're going to talk about. I do think it's good to have hope for the future, to want for humanity to figure it out. But we have to be careful where we place that hope and that energy and make sure that we're not actually making things worse in the process, which is the purpose of today's episode.
Yeah, I think you make some real good points. And you've already spoken to the fact that when it comes to long-termism, effective altruism, all of the things that are, like you said, interrelated, there are some real dangers and some real issues that we have. We have some strong critiques of the way that this is being talked about and thought about and implemented. But first, I just want to validate some of the things that are, in my mind, good or at least logical when it comes to the idea of long-termism. So one of those is, I really appreciate the idea that, like, all people matter. And at least at like the surface level of long-termism, that principle exists. To think that people a generation from now or two generations from now or three generations from now, the fact that their lives hold as much value as my own, I think that is a very wise way to look at things and one that I align with and agree with. I think that people from past generations, their lives held just as much value as my own. And I think people in future generations, their lives hold just as much value as my own. And so the idea that, hey, we need to be looking out for those people in the future makes a lot of sense. I also think that oftentimes doing what is good for the future is also good for the present. And if you think of like a Venn diagram, right? And if you've got good for the present over here and good for the future over here, and there's a certain portion of that that overlaps. And I think that's great. Like, that's a perfect spot to put our efforts. We talk about it when we speak of resilience and we say, hey, yeah, it feels like a lot of initial investment to, let's say, build up like a certain amount of food storage. But that's not all just like, if you don't end up having a catastrophe, that can still benefit you. And that's going to give you peace of mind now, right? It's going to help you in a whole variety of different situations. And it's not like that food's going to go to waste. You can continue to eat that as you go. And so it's not like you're actually spending more on food. Anyway, that's just one example. But oftentimes doing what's best for the future is also what's best for the present. And I love the idea of making sure we're viewing both of those at the same time. Another thing that makes a lot of sense is just the principle of like sacrificing or making efforts now to ensure that the future is better. Every time that you go like to the gym and you exercise so that you can have better health, you're putting forth effort now so that you can have, you know, things better in the future. If you make good choices about your nutrition and you eat good now, you're doing that so that things can go better in the future. If you don't spend all your money, and if you actually budget and save and make some of those sacrifices in the present, you're helping yourself in the future. Like, that's just like a principle of life. And I think it's something that like we have to accept, and it's a good way to live. There does need to be a balance there. When we talk about resilience, we talk about how you do need to enjoy the present and not just spend all of your time prepping for the future. You've got to actually live in the moment. But if you're all just like a YOLO mindset, I'm just going to do whatever I feel in the moment, don't ever think or plan for the future, that's not going to be a good way to live either. So there's extremes on either side. Somewhere in there is the balance. And then the last thing that I think is a really interesting concept when it comes to long-termism is something that I didn't necessarily find this in my research, but it's what it made me think about. Corey, you're familiar with like the butterfly effect.
Yeah.
This idea that like you step on a butterfly today doesn't really make much of an impact today. But maybe that means that a certain like predator that was going to eat that butterfly wasn't able to get their food in that way and had to go find it somewhere else. And because that creature went to a different spot, like another animal interacted in a different way, and it becomes this whole chain reaction. And that this tiny little thing, like stepping on a butterfly today, the more time goes on, the more you see the compounding effects of that. And you could make, you know, a huge impact on the future with just the tiniest little change today.
Yeah, I think the idea, like the butterfly effect, is that a small event can cause a much larger event, right? So like with the butterfly effect, I think the first time I heard about it was like a flap of a butterfly's wing in one part of the world can cause a hurricane across the other side of the world because of the shift in wind patterns and whatever, right?
Yeah, and I think I was using the wrong term. There's a movie called The Butterfly Effect that was from several years ago. I think Ashton Kutcher was in it. Either way, there's also a Ray Bradbury book, The Sound of Thunder. And that's where I think the idea, they're like on this quest to kill a dinosaur. And one of the characters steps on a butterfly and that causes all these impacts.
Gotcha.
Yeah, sorry. So either way, the point is like things are very interconnected, and one small thing here can make a big impact there, and that expounds over time, is the point that I'm trying to make. let's say I choose to become like a really mean, alcoholic, abusive father to my children, that has terrible, tragic impacts on my children. But when you expound it over time and the impact that has on their children and their children and their children, today it might just be affecting a few people, but in the future I've affected hundreds or thousands or millions of people, right?
Sure.
So I appreciate that perspective when it comes to long-termism. I think it's important to remember that what we do today, yes, impacts lives, but it can have a compounding chain reaction, like a continuing effect that grows exponentially over time. So again, the idea of long-termism, just at a surface level, I think a lot of it makes sense. There's some really good principles in there. Where it becomes a problem is when that gets either twisted or manipulated or just taken to an extreme.
Which the actual term long-termism wasn't really introduced or coined until like 2017. So it's relatively recent. And it's around the same time that we started to get a lot of the effective altruism, and then even more recently, the effective accelerationism stuff. And the actual philosophies behind them, when you dig into the philosophy, it starts to look a whole lot like a cult. The general principles that we read are good. Yes, we should prioritize the future. Like you said, the value of a human life in the future is as valuable as a human life today. However, when you actually start to dig in and look at what the sort of founders of this ideology really talk about, what they really prioritize, what they view the future as, it starts to get weird. And it starts to alter the priorities of today, what we're focusing on, which can be disastrous.
And I'll just say it can be used to justify absolutely terrible things.
Atrocities, even. So let's dig into that. Let's start with this. I mentioned degrowth earlier. I think if we wanted to put future people first, right? If we wanted to put the future of humanity and say that that was the most important, then the types of things we should be doing is degrowing. We should be focusing on not continuing to accelerate, not trying to come up with more and more damaging technologies, not rape the earth further, all of those types of things, right? We need to fix what we have broken. And that requires like decreasing the amount of CO2 output, that requires, you know, not growing so much into the empty spaces of the earth and using the resources and all of that stuff. We want to try and find a harmony with earth, right?
Yeah, reducing our consumption, reducing where needed our standard of living in order to make things better for the future.
That's right. To me, and everyone has a different idea of what that looks like, but to me, that seems like the way to go. Now, long-termism is basically the opposite idea of that. They say, no, the idea is not to degrow. The idea is to grow. We need to accelerate. We need to, like, more technology is what is going to fix us. It is the ultimate sort of tech bro, technohopium idea that technology will save us. And if it's not saving us now, it's because we don't have enough. We need more technology to solve the problems. So that's one issue with it.
And can I take a step back on this for just a minute?
Sure.
Because when I was first studying this, I was like, okay, long term, we're talking about a generation, two generations, maybe the next handful of generations. But long termism, what they're really talking about might be thousands of years from now, millions of years from now, even billions of years from now. And you might be getting into this in just a minute, Corey, but the idea, it's both a quantity and a quality thing, where it's like, would it be better if you could have a billion people exist years from now, but they all live in a pretty miserable life? Or would it be better to have, you know, people in the future be happy, but there's really only a handful of them? And one thing that you and I take issue with here is that long-termists just want to see a net positive, meaning Like having 100 people that are 1% happy is just as good as having one person that's 100% happy. Right? In their view, it's just that the total amount of pleasure or human happiness that can exist in the future is worth driving for basically at all costs.
Yeah, so let's dive into that a little bit. So first thing you mentioned there was the long-termism, we're not talking about our grandchildren, right? When I think of the future, we need to make sure that the future is taken care of. I'm thinking of like, how are my kids, my grandkids, a few generations down the line or 100 years in the future, what is the world going to look like? Long-termism is the idea that we need to proliferate as a human species to the maximum extent possible. And that doesn't stop with just like reaching a population of 10 billion on Earth or whatever. They literally believe that we could reach 10 to the 54th power of people in existence, which, I mean, what is that? 10 with 54 zeros, right? I mean, there's no number that we can even know that is, maybe there is, but literally 54 zeros. Like we're talking not quadrillions, not quintillions, like many more multiples of 10. add a bunch of zeros to that. So their goal is to literally take over not just our solar system, but the Milky Way, to put people in every space imaginable and to have so much technology that we can do it by uploading our minds to the clouds and keeping people alive indefinitely. They talk about virtual reality, like humans or I guess sentient, not really humans anymore. It's about transhumanism and this mixture of humans with technology that can live forever uploaded to the cloud and in this joyous state. So they're not just talking about like, we want humans to be like happy and live a fulfilling life. It's just about like how much, and they measure it by pleasure, like this sort of hedonistic, like in units of pleasure, how much can we make sure that people have in the future and that the sum total of human potential and pleasure is reached.
And by the way, essentially at all costs.
At all costs.
If it meant killing, like brutally murdering every person on the planet, except for a handful that would go colonize Mars and then be able to expand to fill the entire universe with quintillions and quintillions of people that are all experiencing some degree of pleasure, that would be justified.
Yeah. So Nick Bostrom, who was one of sort of the original like thinkers on this, he's one of the guys that has written books on this idea of long-termism. They basically don't believe in climate change, or well, I shouldn't say that. They do believe in climate change. They just don't care about it because they find it to be a very relatively small percentage chance that climate change actually causes extinction. And they don't view anything as a threat unless it could cause extinction. They view these types of things as minor blips in the larger scale of advancing humanity as we go into the cosmos and multiply throughout the universe. Their goal is to make sure that humanity survives until the heat death of like the planet or the universe itself. Just pretty ridiculously ambitious things. But like you said, they do it at the expense of today. Essentially, and they have said this, if they needed to commit a like genocide or nuke a country or whatever to continue or like to extinguish threats to humanity, then that is something worth doing in order to ensure that we reach our potential.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So that means, like, they're putting money and effort and energy into this idea of accelerationism. Grow, 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 more, more, more technology. We got to get to this point at the expense of the people who suffer today. So instead of, you know, they're looking at the future saying we want to make sure that we maximize future potential and future happiness or pleasure among humanity. But while it sounds really nice to say, well, let's prioritize future humanity over today, they actually do it at the expense of today. They don't care about poverty. They don't care about helping people today. They don't care about climate change. They don't care about the fact that all that energy expense and the resource expense is hurting the global South and the poor and the people who least deserve it. None of that matters at all. It's the goal of getting to that future state.
Which, by the way, when you talk about that so much hope is in technology, they will even go as far as to say, hey, people in more developed countries have a higher chance of, you know, working in jobs that will further technology. And so when it comes to prioritizing lives, people in impoverished nations, developing nations, the global South, their lives are much less of a priority. That, hey, if we've got to make choices that are going to affect lives, like, let's protect the people in the rich countries that are developing these technologies.
Yeah. Yeah. The poor people aren't helping. They're not, like, they're just out in the fields farming or whatever. Like, we want to keep around the people that are going to get us closer to our goal, right? You mentioned this idea of what it, like, quality and quantity. And you're right. So one of the examples that I've seen used, and by the way, this is coming, some of this is coming from a paper in a magazine called Aeon. This is a great article. We'll post a link to it. Somebody named Emil Torres talks about long-termism in this paper. And one of the examples he uses is that in long-termism, if you could have a trillion humans in the future, and their happiness scale, their pleasure scale, was at a one, meaning they had a very low amount of pleasure. Their lives were awful, but there was a trillion of them. You multiply that trillion by that rating scale of one, and you have an overall score of 1 trillion. He said, meanwhile, if you had 1 billion people in the future whose pleasure scale was at 999, so almost 1,000 times the quality of life, standard of living, happiness, pleasure, and you multiply that 999 by the billion people, you get 999 billion. And since 1 trillion is higher than 999 billion, the preferable outcome is the 1 trillion miserable people over the 1 billion thriving people. Simply because we've maximized the overall aggregate of, like, that pleasure scale. So If you followed us to this point, you can kind of see how messed up this idea is. One other way in which it is completely messed up is that it's basically taking humans and putting them above everything else. Not just putting future humans above current humans, but putting humans above nature. Putting humans above ecology, above animals. Like, they're willing to say, we can destroy and take advantage of anything and everything in order to just make sure that humans reach this future where we're living in virtual realities as, like, brains in jars or whatever. It's just, it feels so wildly separated from reality, from fulfillment, from, like, the types of things that bring me true joy and happiness and fulfillment. It's so cold. It's cold towards you know, it talked about things like the Holocaust and all of these things just being minor blips because we're going to live for millions or billions or even a trillion years as a human species. So because of that, these atrocities that have happened don't really matter in the long scheme.
Right. That something as terrible as the Holocaust, when you look at it, zoom back and look at it from the long term, it's like a 90-year-old man, and that was just one time when he stubbed his toe.
Yeah, exactly. Another example from the article.
Yeah, and to me, this is an example of where people, certain people, you know, we've all got kind of like an analytical side to us and an emotional side to us, and I'm glad that we have both. And in some of us, one side is stronger than the other, right, when you look at how our brains work. But to me, when you talk about it being cold, it's because it is all analytical. It's all like, yes, on a spreadsheet, it makes more sense. 1 trillion units of pleasure compared to 999 billion units of pleasure. Of course, take the 1 trillion, right? But it's not factoring in all the context and all that actually matters about being alive. And so I think it's I think it's a very dangerous way to think. And one of the things that surprises me most is that this isn't just a couple of like weirdos in a basement who have come up with this idea. This is a very mainstream idea, and it is very well funded. And especially when you talk about like effective altruism, there are some very prominent individuals who have been promoting this. And so this is actually a philosophy that if we're trying to push back against it or challenge it or balance it, we will see opposition from a bunch of people that really do adhere to this kind of thinking.
Yeah. So like Elon Musk, right, has basically endorsed some of the books written on this from William McCaskill. He has said that long-termism is a very close match to his worldview. And look, I think a lot of people who latch onto it might try and just latch on to the base of it, this idea, the very basic things, the things that you talked about that could be viewed as good, that the future of humanity is important and that we want to like make sure that we're putting that first. But what we've talked about here is like the crux of it, right? And even if it doesn't go so as dramatic as to talk about living into billions of years in the future, the idea still, though, that we are putting the future ahead of today, that we are putting it ahead of those who are suffering today, those who need our help most today. We are, instead of saying that we should help those in the future, not by limiting or keeping in check the number of people, right, and the relative quality of life of those people, it's simply more, accelerate, put the pedal to the metal, and push forward. These people, like you said, are wealthy. There is a lot of money and funding in this. In the article that I mentioned in the Aeon magazine, it talks about how these people are seeking high levels of political involvement in an effort to put them in places where decisions can be made based off of that. We've seen the type of influence that the tech industry has on politics, the money in the lobbying and all of that. And so when you think about this type of thought process and the people who would be willing to commit atrocities today in order to protect this idea of the future, it can get quite scary, especially as we head into collapse with all of the issues with xenophobia and climate migration, as we need now more than ever effort and time and focus and energy and money put into helping those who are going to be most affected by climate change and all the other aspects of collapse. What's wild to me is that long-termism is all about improving technology and creating more technology, when that very technology is what could be the most existential of threats that we have. And the idea behind it, again, with the effective acceleration, the philosophy is that, again, if technology is dangerous, it's because we haven't created enough of it or the right type yet. So we just need to keep creating more and more and more. We talk about collapse being a cliff, right? We keep pushing ourselves higher, not realizing that we're eroding the base underneath us. And effective altruism is just basically saying, let's just take a rocket ship up to space, right? And then just assuming that what comes next will be good, that we'll be able to keep moving, to keep supplying it, to keep making things better.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you talk about technology, of course, we've mentioned AI and this idea that, you know, long-termists would say we've got to keep driving towards this all-knowing AI that can solve our problems. But another example that came from that article you cited earlier is this idea that, like, if it's a behavior problem with, you know, that's leading us toward societal collapse, that we need to keep pushing for more and more technology, because at some point we can develop something that will help us change our morals.
Right.
You know, that maybe there will be some sort of a medical advancement where you can take this pill and it will help you not do bad things as a human. And so it's this idea that, like, everything is an engineering problem. And if we just get more and more technology, that will, in one way or another, lead to us fixing any of the issues that we have, which I think is extremely optimistic.
And look, I mentioned early in the episode, I've taken an interest in AI. I'm fascinated by it. I'm terrified of it, but I'm fascinated by it. There are a lot of collapse where people I've seen in the discussions who discount AI as neither a threat nor an opportunity. It simply is a distraction, right? And they talk about how some people will talk about how AI will never become anything other than what it currently is, and that it's all kind of a smoke show and whatever, and there's not enough energy to ever even get to a point where AI will become dangerous. Other people think that AI is growing rapidly, and that if we do ever hit AGI, that it will be, you know, just all the bad things that could happen or that are already happening. And then, of course, you have techno hopiumists who believe that it's going to save us all. Some benevolent AI is going to have all of the answers and fix all of the problems. You know, in my opinion, at this point, I pretty much see like a 0% chance that humanity is going to pull together and we're going to implement some sort of degrowth, right? There's no indication that any of that will happen. When I look at AI, I think there's a very good chance that AI is going to continue to grow. I think it is going to get out of hand. I think there's a very good chance that the effective accelerationists are going to continue to, you know, push the pedal to the metal, and AI is going to get out of control. It's going to do things that we don't expect, right? Or it's going to be used just to continue down this, like, capitalist hellscape that we're in to increase, you know, the wealth gap and make life harder for the poor and all of those things. There is a very, very small chance, sure, that we could create an AI that could give us the answers and the solutions. Maybe one day there's a breakthrough in nuclear fusion technology, right? Maybe there is a small chance that all diseases could be cured and the AI could teach us how to live in harmony in some utopia, right? Like it's a non-zero percent chance that could happen. But it seems that there are so many people that view that as like that's what's going to happen. We just have to continue forward. And those people aren't necessarily long-termists. They're not looking at it from this weird, like, billion years in the future, screw the people of today, we got to make sure that tomorrow is great. Like, they just want to believe that someone is pulling the strings and is going to save us. I don't blame people for thinking that, for wanting to believe that. But when you look behind the curtains and see what people who are really driving the AI side and the tech side, what they're gunning for, and you see that it's this long-termism stuff, it gets creepy to me, and it like guts me of any hope that we are in any way in good hands, especially wielding such potential technology.
Yeah, and one point that I think it's worth making with all of this is it is unfair ever to judge a group by the most extreme in that group, right? If somebody from a third party perspective, right, were to look at the Collapse community and just look at the most extreme ideas that are presented in the Collapse community, it would seem like such a crazy place.
Right. If they all thought we were Guy McPherson and like preaching that the clathrate gun hypothesis was going to kill us all in the next 2 years or something.
Yeah, I can't speak to who the most extreme are, but you could say that about any group, right? Where if you just go to any group, you take the most extreme and say this is what that group believes, then that'd be very unfair. In this case, it's a little bit different because this is like the founders of this movement are saying some pretty intense things and dangerous things. Either way, I think there are a lot of people who would consider themselves like subscribers to the idea of long-termism that probably have a much more reasonable perspective than what we've described. But one thing that I think is worth taking just a moment on is this idea that like if you're trying to maximize every decision, you can get into some weird extremes. If it's all about doing the most good, you can tie yourself up into ethical knots. And people have philosophized about like, you know, the answers to all these moral dilemmas for years. You've heard of like the trolley problem and all these variations of that. Would you kill one person to save five others or whatever? At one point, as I was reading, there was something specific to effective altruism. An essay that talked about this drowning child analogy. And the idea is if there's a man in an expensive suit confronted with a drowning child, should the man save the child and ruin his suit? Or would it be better if he sold his suit and donated the proceeds to charity?
And still let the child drown, or?
Yeah, like, let's say he either had to jump in right then and ruin his suit.
Okay.
To save the child.
All right.
Or by not saving the child and making sure he didn't ruin his suit, he could go sell this expensive suit, donate to charity, and it's a charity that would benefit tons of people.
And this is a serious question?
Yes.
They look themselves in the mirror and ask this question and answer it seriously.
And I love that that's your response.
And even worse is my guess is that the answer is the most ridiculous one.
Well, the worrisome thing is that there is debate on it, like heavy debate on what's better. And that's what I'm trying to say is like, okay, so maybe this person could not ruin their suit and they could go sell it. And they could go donate to charity, and that would benefit a lot of people. And you could claim, again, just on spreadsheet math, that it was the better choice. But any reasonable, rational person, I think, would say, like, you idiot, save the drowning child.
Well, yeah, take the jacket off and then save the child. And then sell it.
No, no, no.
Sell the jacket long before you come across the drowning child, and then... when you find the drowning child, you will have already sold the jacket.
No, no, you can't change the scenario. It's in that moment. That decision has to be made. Anyways, the point is that it's like people are so quick to critique, hey, you donated all this money to that charity. That charity is not nearly as good as this other charity. or you spent a lifetime working in this career that you thought was like a noble career that would help humanity, that doesn't do as much good as if you would have dedicated your life to this other career, right? And when you get so invested in trying to pick apart and critique and figure out what is the best way to spend time or money or resources, again, that's where you get into weird stuff. And so, like, at some point, we have to put aside the spreadsheets. We have to put aside the analytical. We have to use a little bit more of, like, our actual emotional and reasonable, rational, well-balanced self to make these decisions. And I would hope, if you're listening to this, that you'll just try to do good things. Try to help people. And it might not be like the best or the most perfect way, but that's okay, right? As long as we're trying to do what we think is good. So that was a little bit of a soapbox. But again, I get worried when I see the kind of debates that are happening in this realm. And I think that's why people get so twisted up in these weird ideologies.
You know, I follow a couple of guys who talk about AI. And they talk about what they view the future as with AI. And I, like, there's a naivety to it. There's also, like, I respect them for wanting what they think is going to happen. They have their version of what the future looks like and what they want it to look like. I hear them talk about all of the good things that they want from the future, right? They don't talk about AI and say that they're so excited for all the corruption it's going to cause and how they can use it to do bad things and take advantage of other people. Like, they are genuinely excited about what it could be. I want to be that person. As in, like, I wish I could be that person. I wish I could truly believe that the future is going to be that way.
Like, only view the cup half full perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I could ignore all of the dangers and the harms and the bad side effects that come from the direction that we're headed. But I'll say it again. I've said it a few times. I don't fault people for wanting it. It's dangerous when it becomes such a large group. I don't know if it's a majority, but a large amount of people who are unknowingly spurring on the idea of effective accelerationism, right? Or by connection, long-termism, by saying, yes, the only way we can fix the future is by creating this benevolent AI, for example. And so we have to move for it. We have to keep doing it. We have to fund it. We have to vote in the people who want that as well. And perhaps unknowingly put people in positions of power who have these ideologies. Elon Musk, Sam Bankman-Fried, right, who was over FTX, right, which of course had this huge collapse. He was an outward long-termist and effective altruist. That was his goal. And in the end, like, he was willing to go to extreme lengths, illegal lengths, right, for it, as part of his motivation.
Well, and why wouldn't you? If you're so bought into this mindset, really, in this kind of a ideology, the ends always justify the means. And you can do basically whatever you want as long as you think it's going to result in the most long-term good. And this gets dangerous when you talk about people being voted into power. Like, hey, let's do preemptive war. Like, let's, for the sake of national security and saving hundreds of millions of lives, let's go wipe this nation off the map that could potentially be a threat. And that's the kind of thinking that can happen, again, when taken to extremes.
Yeah, or even, again, bringing up the idea of mass migration, right? If someone is in power who has this type of thinking, says, look, it is an existential threat to humanity because the poorer nations, the poorer people of South America or the global South are infiltrating and threatening the way of life of those who are like the economy and the way of life of those who are trying to create this AI and create this technology and all this. Like, we need to make sure that none of that migration happens. And what does that lead to, right? It is a further excuse akin to further fascism, terrible xenophobia, atrocities. It's a way you can justify the Israel war in Palestine. And again, just the amount of money that is being, you know, pushed into this type of stuff. When you have Elon Musk taking over X, right? An entire like social media platform, one of the largest in the world. You have SBF again with FTX. He funneled more than $130 million in 2022 alone directly into the long-termist movement via one of his, it was called the FTX Future Fund. And most people like don't know about a lot of this, right? I knew that there was all this messed up stuff with SBF. I did not know. I didn't realize that long-termism was behind it all. And that all that money that he was stealing, basically, was going towards this directly. Anyway, what happens to this movement in the future? Does it continue to gain more ground? I don't know. I know as this excitement and hype around AI continues to grow, and it seems to be growing exponentially, people will start looking to it as more and more of a savior of humanity. The way capitalism works, more and more money will flow towards it, right? Will it end up being a bubble, a big bubble that pops? Will it end up changing the course of history, the course of humanity? And will there be that very small chance that it does what, you know, what the effective altruists or the effective accelerationists say will happen, which is to help find ways to heal the world and fix all our problems? I guess that is yet to be seen.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Transitioning to a decarbonized economy sounds like just one change. In fact, this shift requires several transitions across sectors, geographies, and timelines. In Talking Transitions, a new podcast brought to you by the EY organization and Foresight Climate and Energy, we look at how the transition is affecting three key areas: energy, financial services, and government. The Talking Transitions podcast is out now. Download today from wherever you get your podcasts, or visit talkingtransitions.com to find out more.